good evening. I am curious to know tonight what you actually do while listening to podcasts, and specifically mine, because I'm self-absorbed, but I, for instance, typically load up my iPod and go out on a long run and listen to podcasts then. And I know that many people listen while they're working out or while they're commuting, or some people even as they're going to sleep at night. But Sarah wrote into the website saying that she takes tissue culture while listening to my podcast. And this is an activity she describes as monotonous, although I think it's damned cool that somebody's listening to these bedtime stories while doing tissue culture, whatever that means. So if you have anything interesting to add to that list, please get in touch. Email is up on the website, the comments are on the website, whatever. I'm very curious. So, good evening. It's the 4th of May, 2006, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. Jewelry by Alberto Moravia. You can't be quite sure that when a woman finds her way into a group of men friends, that group, without the slightest doubt, is bound to disintegrate, and each member of it to go off on his own account. That year, we formed a group of young men who were all in the closest sympathy with each other, always united, always in agreement, always together. We were all of us earning a very good living. Torre with his garage, the two Modesti brothers with their meat broker's business, Pippo Morganti with his pork butcher's shop, Rinaldo with his bar, and I with a varied assortment of things. At that moment I was dealing in resin and products allied to it. Although we were all under 30, none of us weighed less than 12 or 13 stone. We all knew how to wield a knife and fork. During the day we were at work, but from 7 o'clock onward we were always together, first at Rinaldo's bar in the Corso Vittorio, and then in a restaurant with a garden in the neighbourhood of the Chiesa Nuova. We spent Sundays together, of course, either at the stadium watching football matches, or on expeditions to the Castelli Romani, or, in the warm weather, at Ostia or Ladispoli. There were 6 of us, yet it might be said that we were one single person. So, supposing that one of us was smitten by a caprice, the other 5 were soon smitten too. With regard to jewellery, it was Torre who started it. He came one evening to the restaurant wearing a wristwatch of massive gold, with a plated gold strap nearly an inch wide. We asked him who had given it to him. "The director of the Bank of Italy," he said, by which he meant that he had bought it with his own money. Then he slipped it off and showed it to us. It was a watch of a well-known make, double-cased, and with a second hand, and, together with its stiff-plated strap, it weighed goodness knows how much. It made a great impression upon us. "An investment," said somebody. But Torre replied, "What do you mean, an investment? I like wearing it on my wrist, that's all." When we met next day at the usual restaurant, Morganti already had a wristwatch of his own, with a gold strap too, but not such a heavy one. Then it was the turn of the Modesti brothers, who each bought one, larger ones than Torre's, and with plated straps that were less solid but broader. As for Rinaldo and me, as we both liked Torre's watch, we asked him where he had got it, and then went together to a good shop in the Corso, and each bought one. It was now May, and often in the evenings we used to go to Monte Mario, to the inn there, to drink wine and eat fresh beans and sheep's milk cheese. One evening Torre put out his hand to help himself to beans and we all saw a ring on his finger, a massive ring containing a diamond of no very great size, but a fine one nevertheless. "My goodness!" we exclaimed. "Now look here," he said roughly, "you're not to imitate me, you pack of monkeys. I bought this so as to be different." However, he took it off and we passed it round. It was really a very fine diamond, limpid, perfect. But Torre's a big, rather soft-looking chap, with a flat, flabby face, two little pig-like eyes, a nose that looks as if it were made of butter, and a mouth like a purse with broken hinges. With that ring on his small, fat finger, and that watch on his stumpy wrist, he looked almost like a woman. The diamond ring, as he wished, was not copied. However, we each of us bought a nice ring for ourselves. The Modesti brothers had two similar rings made of red gold, but with different stones in them, one green and one blue. Rinaldo bought himself a ring of a more or less antique style, pierced and carved, with a brown cameo containing a little white figure of a nude woman. Morganti, always anxious to cut a dash, acquired one actually made of platinum with a black stone, while I myself, being more conventional, contented myself with a ring which had a square setting and a flat yellow stone upon which I had my initials cut, so that I could use it for sealing parcels. After the rings came cigarette cases. It was Torre, as usual, who began it by producing a long, flat case, made of gold, of course, with crossed lines incised on it, and snapping it open under our noses. And then everyone imitated him, some in one way and some in another. After the cigarette cases, we all indulged our own whims. Somebody bought a bracelet with a medal to wear on his other wrist. Somebody else a pressure-controlled fountain pen. Somebody else a little chain with a cross and a medallion of the Madonna to hang around his neck. And somebody else a cigarette lighter. Torre, vainest of all, acquired three more rings, and now he looked more like a woman than ever, especially when he took off his jacket and appeared in a short-sleeved shirt, displaying his big soft arms and hands covered with rings. We were all laden with jewellery now, and I don't know why, but it was just at that moment that things began to go wrong. It didn't amount to much. A little teasing, a few rather caustic remarks, a few sharp retorts. And then, one evening, Rinaldo, who owned the bar, arrived at our usual restaurant with a girl, his new cashier. Her name was Lucretia, and she was perhaps not yet even 20, but she was as fully developed as a woman of 30. Her skin was white as milk, her eyes black, large, steady and expressionless, her mouth red, her hair black. She looked indeed like a statue, especially as she always remained still and composed, and hardly spoke at all. Rinaldo confided to us that he had found her by means of a commercial advertisement, and said he knew nothing about her, not even whether she had a family or whom she lived with. She was just the right person, he added, for the cash desk. A girl like that attracted clients by her good looks and then, by her serious demeanour, kept them at a distance. A plain girl fails to attract, and a pretty but forthcoming one does no work and creates disorder. the presence of Lucretia that evening caused considerable constraint among us. We sat very upright the whole time, with our jackets on, talking in a reserved manner, without any jokes or coarse words, and eating very politely. Even Tore tried to eat his fruit with a knife and fork, without much success, however. Next day we all rushed to the bar to see her at her duties. She was sitting on a tiny stool. Her hips, which were already too broad for her age, bulging over its sides, and her haughty bosom was almost pressing against the keys of the cash register. We all stood there, open-mouthed, as we watched her calmly, precisely, unhurriedly distributing price dockets, continually pressing down the keys of the machine without even looking at them, her eyes fixed straight ahead of her in the direction of the bar counter. She notified the barman, each time, in a quiet, impersonal voice. Two coffees, one bitter, Jesus, one orangeade, one beer. She never smiled. She never looked at the customer, and certainly there were some who went up very close to her in the hopes of being looked at. She was dressed with propriety, but like the poor girl that she was, in a simple, sleeveless white dress. But clean, fresh, well ironed. She wore no jewellery, not even earrings, although the lobes of her ears had been pierced. We, of course, when we saw how pretty she was, started making jokes, encouraged by Rinaldo, who was proud of her. But she, after the first few jokes, said, "We shall meet at the restaurant this evening, shan't we? So leave me in peace now. I don't like being disturbed while I'm working." Tore, to whom these words were addressed because he was the most prying and ill-mannered, said with feigned surprise, "I say, I'm sorry. We're only poor people, and we didn't know we had to do with a princess. I'm sorry, we didn't mean any offence." She replied dryly, "I'm not a princess, but a poor girl who works for a living, and I'm not offended. One coffee and one bitter." And so we went away, feeling rather humiliated. In the evening, we all met, as usual, at the restaurant. Rinaldo and Lucretia were the last to arrive, and we immediately ordered our dinner. For a short time, while we were waiting for our food, there was again a feeling of constraint. Then the proprietor brought in a big dish of chicken alla romana, already cut up, with tomato sauce and red peppers. We all looked at each other, and Tore, interpreting our common feeling, exclaimed, "You know what I say. When I eat, I like to feel free. Do as I do, and you'll feel better." As he spoke, he seized hold of a leg of chicken, and, lifting it to his mouth with his two ring-covered hands, started to devour it. This was the signal. After a moment of hesitation, we all began eating with our hands, all except Rinaldo, and, of course, Lucretia, who nibbled delicately at a little piece of breast. After the first moments, we recovered ourselves, and went back, in every possible way, to our old noisy ways. We talked as we ate, and ate as we talked. We gulped down brimming glasses of wine with our mouths full. We slouched back in our chairs. We told our usual racy stories. In fact, perhaps out of defiance, we behaved worse than usual, and I don't remember ever having eaten so much, and with so much enjoyment, as I did that evening. When we had finished dinner, Tore loosened the buckle of his trouser band and uttered a profound belch, which would have shaken the ceiling if it hadn't happened that we were out of doors, under a pergola. "Ugh! I feel better," he declared. He took a toothpick and, as he always did, started prodding at his teeth, all of them, one by one, and then all over again. And finally, with the toothpick stuck into the corner of his mouth, he told us all a really indecent story. At this, Lucretia rose to her feet and said, "Rinaldo, I feel tired. If you don't mind, will you take me home now?" We all exchanged meaning glances. She had been Rinaldo's cashier for barely 2 days, and already she was talking to him familiarly and calling him by his Christian name. A commercial advertisement in the paper, indeed! They went out, and the moment they had gone, Torre gave another belch and said, "About time, too. I've had enough. Did you see the haughtiness of it? And him following behind, as good as gold, as meek as a lamb. As for that commercial advertisement, matrimonial advertisement, I should say." For 2 or 3 days, the same scenes were repeated. Lucretia eating composedly and silently, the rest of us trying to pretend she wasn't there. Rinaldo divided between Lucretia and us, and not knowing what line to take. But there was something brewing. We all felt that. The girl, still waters run deep, gave no sign. But all the time she was wanting Rinaldo to choose between herself and us. At last, one evening, for no precise reason, perhaps it was hot, and, as one knows, heat gets on people's nerves, Rinaldo, halfway through dinner, made an attack upon us in this way. "This is the last time I'm coming to eat with you." We were all astonished, and Torre asked, "Oh, is that really so? And may we ask why?" "Because I don't like you." "You don't like us? Well, I'm sure we're all very sorry for that. Really, terribly sorry." "You're a bunch of swine, that's what you are." "Now be careful what you say, but are you crazy?" "Yes, you're a bunch of swine. I say it and I repeat it. Eating with you makes me feel sick." By this time we were all red in the face with anger, and some of us had jumped up from the table. "It's you," said Torre, "who's the biggest swine of all. Who gave you the right to judge us? Haven't we always been together? Haven't we always done the same things?" "You be quiet," Rinaldo said to him. "With all that jewellery on you, you look like one of those women. You know what I mean. All you need is some scent. I say, haven't you ever thought of putting on some scent?" This blow was aimed at all of us, and, realizing the source from which it came, we all looked at Lucretia. But she, hypocritically, kept on pulling Rinaldo by the sleeve and urging him to stop and come away. Then Torre said, "You got jewellery too. You got a watch and a ring and a bracelet, just as much as anybody else." Rinaldo was beside himself now. "But do you know what I'm going to do?" he cried. "I'm taking them all off and giving them to her. Come on, take them, Lucretia. I'm giving them to you." As he spoke, he slipped off his ring, his bracelet, his wristwatch, pulled his cigarette case out of his pocket, and threw the whole lot into the girl's lap. "None of the rest of you," he said insultingly, "would ever do that. You couldn't do it." "Go to hell," said Torre, but you could see now that he was ashamed of having all those rings on his fingers. "Rinaldo," said Lucretia calmly, "take your things and let's go." She gathered all the things Rinaldo had given her into a heap and put them into his pocket. Rinaldo, however, owing to some kind of grudge that he had against us, continued to abuse us even while allowing Lucretia to drag him away. "You're a bunch of swine, I tell you. Why, Don't you learn how to eat? Why don't you learn how to live? Swine! Idiot! Shouted Tore, mad with rage. Imbecile! You've allowed yourself to be led away by that other idiot who's standing beside you! If you could have seen Rinaldo! He jumped right over the table and seized hold of Tore by the collar of his shirt. We had to pull them apart. That evening, after they had gone, we did not breathe a word, and we all left after a few minutes. Next evening we met again, but now our old gaiety was gone. We noticed, too, on this occasion, that several of the rings had vanished, and some of the watches, too. After two evenings, we none of us had any jewellery left, and we were duller than ever. A week went by, and then, with one excuse and another, we ceased to meet at all. It was all finished, and, as one knows, when things are finished, they don't begin again. No one likes warmed-up soup. Later on I heard that Rinaldo had married Lucretia. I was told that, at the church, she was more thickly covered with jewellery than a statue of the Madonna. And Tore? I saw him at his garage a short time ago. He had a ring on his finger, but it was not of gold and it had no diamond in it. It was one of those silver rings that mechanics wear.